When you run a small business, you know firsthand how hard it is to acquire new customers with ads on social media. Advertising on TV works, but for years it was too expensive, difficult to measure, and only accessible for advertisers with large budgets. That's why Kevin O'Leary created Wonder Ads. Powered by Tutari, Wonder Ads makes TV advertising as simple as digital ad platforms. Know which creative is performing, test across popular cable networks and streaming services, and track metrics like customer acquisition cost and return on ad spend. Scale your small business on TV. Submit a demo at wonderads.com.
Maybe you're the outdoorsy type who thrives in inclement weather and unsavory circumstances. But that doesn't mean you can't enjoy a little luxury while you're on the road. Introducing the Defender 110, a luxury vehicle that was designed for the modern explorer. With robust materials, rich finishes, and practical storage, the Defender family of vehicles are built with purpose so you can adventure any way you want in complete comfort. A vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Design your Defender at LandRoverUSA.com.
Welcome to Switched On Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
Charlie Harding, back in June, there was an important release that we have neglected to talk about.
What was that?
Megan Thee Stallion's third studio album, Megan.
Wow, it's like prog fusion metal hip hop. This is awesome.
That was the album's lead single, Cobra. Mm-hmm. But something interesting happened, Charlie. That lead single is not the biggest hit from this album.
Okay.
Neither was the album's second single, Hiss. Bodies on bodies on bodies on bodies. Say he fuck Megan and now he's a topic. These niggas thinking they lower the value. All this free promo, I'm turning a profit. Nor was the album's third single, Boa. Do you sense a theme here?
Snakes.
It was Megan's fourth single off this album, Mamushi, featuring the Japanese hip-hop artist Yuki Chiba, that became the unlikely smash from this record. Yuki Chiba, not really a household name, I think, to most U.S. listeners.
No.
Certainly not someone with the same recognition as another of Megan's collaborators on this album, RM, the rapper from BTS.
Right.
Yuki Chiba, this is more of Megan going out on a limb, I think. And she's being rewarded. This song is incredibly popular. It's has its own viral dance, of course. I mean, as one does in 2024.
We need to make a viral dance.
And when Megan performed the song on her tour in London, she brought out Yuki Chiba and they were having the time of their lives. Huh.
Make some motherfucking noise all the way from Japan.
Will I regret asking for the translation of Mamushi, and does it have to do with snakes?
I mean, you won't regret it.
Okay.
And you are correct. So, two for two.
Wait, what does it mean?
It's a venomous pit viper native to Japan.
Oh, cool.
And my understanding is that within Japanese culture, there's also maybe certain folktales that it references involving like a femme fatale. So I think Megan is also reaching into that meaning as well.
Okay, I'm glad I asked.
So this is pretty interesting, Charlie. Here's a hip-hop track by one of our most verbally dexterous and attitudinal rappers in the game today.
Truth.
It's become the biggest hit off this album, and half of the song is in Japanese.
It's definitely notable on the Hot 100 and for any major hit. Like, K-pop has been having a moment, but J-pop definitely has been not as strong. And Japanese hip hop has not been a big export to the U.S. market in terms of chart performance recently.
So with that in mind, today I want to listen to this track, Mamushi. I want to find out why it's resonating with listeners. Mm. And then I want to talk about the history of Japanese songs within the U.S. music industry. And we can think about how Megan Thee Stallion has maybe avoided some of the pitfalls of appropriation and exoticization that so many American artists have failed to avoid when they're trying to incorporate Japanese music into their work.
So you're saying that dabbling into the world of Japanese pop music is a bit of a mamushi, a pit viper? Like, it's a dangerous game to play, but she's pulling it off. Or so we'll see.
I like that, Charlie. Let's enter the viper pit. First, I want to unpack everything that's happening in Mamushi and see if we can uncover what makes this song so catchy and effective. Let's spin that chorus one more time, okay?
There's something about this groove. I can't quite name it.
Okane kasegu, orera wa sta. Okane kasegu, watashi wa sta. I cannot get this out of my head, Charlie. I'm going to become a weeb after spending the last week listening to this track. Are you familiar with weeb? Yeah, see, I wasn't either. See, we're already learning.
Okay, what's a weeb?
A weeb is a non-Japanese person who's obsessed with Japanese culture.
Okay. So you're on your Duolingo doing some language skills?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the hardest translation because Megan Thee Stallion first gives us this chorus in English. I get money, I'm a star, 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 star,
star, star, star. I get money, I'm a star. Right.
And then we get the Japanese version. Mm. And it's slightly different. Okane kasegu orera wa sta. That's what the rapper Yuki Chiba sings. And that's like first person plural, like we get money. We are stars. Megan comes in and she says, Okane kasegu watashi wa sta. And that's like, I get money, I'm a star.
Huh.
And then they both say sta, 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 which is a word that is the same in Japanese and English, or almost.
Huh. Yeah.
So that's a nice bit of overlap. Star, sta becomes this point of convergence for these two rappers.
It's something noteworthy in the performance that Megan gives, the way that she says the word sta, the breath of it all. Her breath is doing as much work as the actual words themselves. Stuh. There's aggression. There's intensity. It's slightly distorted. I literally think we can hear more of the breath than we can hear the enunciated syllables.
I think it's even more intricate than that. The breath becomes its own rhythmic element. She says, stuh, 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 stuh. I'm not sure that was.
I don't know that that's.
I apologize to everyone who just had to hear that. But here's what I'm trying to convey. Yeah. The breath becomes this triplet figure within the song. Let's listen to it again. And like you were saying, let's just focus in on that breathy triplet. I get money, I'm a star, 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 star. I think this is even like a sample in a way. Like, I don't think that's literally her breathing like that. I feel like it's been processed into the track, but I might be wrong.
I don't know if it's a sample. I mean, it's certainly processing. Like, that's maybe very heavy compression and distortion. It's emphasizing something happening in the back of the word, a very quiet moment that would otherwise be inaudible. So it's definitely some post-production trickery. I agree.
Stop, stop, stop.
I don't think you're doing
it. It's hard to do. It's hard to do.
I don't think there's an in-breath and an out-breath. I think it's two out-breaths. I think it's stop, stop, not stop. But
okay, we got to go back to the tape here. I get money, I'm a star, 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 star. No, it's definitely an exhalation and then an inhalation. Inhalation.
Stop. Stop. You're right. I think there's an
Stop. Stop. Well, okay. this is just upsetting.
Okay.
But let's move on to what this breathiness might symbolize within the track.
Mm.
And if I had to connect it to the world of the track, this is all, like so many of Megan's songs, this is really about her sense of empowerment and confidence and her
right.
place at the top of the rap game.
It's like saying body, yaddy, 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 yaddy. It's just like her breath is powerful.
It's a sense of effort and hard work. Mm. And when you hear that, you feel like Megan is ready to leave it all on the floor with every track, you know? She's like the hardest working rapper in the game. And you can literally hear her panting through it.
It makes me think, I don't know if this Pit Viper, the Mamushi, has some kind of hiss, but there is this sort of like snake-like quality to it. It's menacing. It's fearful. It's going to put you on edge. Like, I'm paying attention.
I like that. I like that. And that's like a core part of Megan Thee Stallion's imagery, not just on this album, but throughout her career. So maybe it does give you that sense of danger and caution that she's trying to create. Now, if we move past this breathy triplet, we get to her actual flow in the first verse, and she's not leaving behind the Japanese references. She drops this other great line in the middle of the first verse. He know who I am, ain't had to say my name. Stack it up like Tetris, but this money ain't a game. Watashi kawaii, e kalata.
Drinking out the bottle, getting twisted maruchan. Tetris?
Kawaii. She's saying, I'm cute, you know? Don't mess with me.
But isn't Tetris Russian? I mean, it was released
Tetris
on
Tetris is Russian. I'm not saying every lyric is Japanese.
Okay, but it was released on the Game Boy, and then it had...
Nintendo is Japanese. That's true. Okay. So this track is replete with Japanese language, Japanese references, and then we haven't even gotten to the feature from Yuki Chiba. I love this guy's flow.
It's interesting that the whole track is very minimal and the voice is so present right in front of you. No reverb. Like, it's processed. It definitely has this sort of distorted quality to it, but it really sounds present right in front of you, intimate. They're not hiding behind anything.
And his style of rapping is so calm and collected. It's a nice counterpoint to Megan because she's always saying everything in like such a fierce and like take no prisoners way. Yuki Chiba, by contrast, seems like he's got all the time in the world. He's like just kind of like speaking gently. It's so cool to me. But then he'll like drop in his own little triplets that connect back to that breathy Megan triplet from earlier in the track. And then when we get to the very end of his verse, there's a great moment where he kind of does the inverse of Megan. Megan drops a few lines in Japanese. Yuki Chiba drops a few lines in English. Nice to meet you, suru aisatsu.
I'm so happy, arigatai na. So there's this cross-language, cross-cultural exchange of two people saying, I'm great, I'm a star. You know, your classic braggadocio. And I think there's something, you keep pointing out this triplet sound, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
There's a way in which the triplet against the beat is kind of emphasizing that quality of like, we are standing out, we are unique, we are special, we are a star. When the beat is, you know, one and two and three and four and, we're going against that beat, we're going against the grain, we're da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They're fluid, they can kind of make anything work.
Asserting their independence and agency and stardom.
Maybe this is an absolute reach, but I like the way that the vocal performance creates that confidence against that very simple beat.
Right here. I think there's also something about the beat of the song that gives a lot of space for these rappers to offer these different flows and syncopations. The beat is actually by a Japanese producer who's worked with Yuki Chiba before named Koshi.
Okay.
But I feel like this beat is also directly in the lineage of a lot of Megan Thee Stallion's other songs.
Oh, absolutely.
And that has a lot to do with the way it features the piano. This is like one of the constants in Megan Thee Stallion's discography.
Definitely.
Going back to what was probably her first breakout hit, Savage. I'm that bitch, been that bitch, still that bitch. And followed up on tracks like Megan's piano from her last album, Something for the Hotties.
Big ass chain around my neck so these niggas know I'm rich. And I don't need shit but the dick. Big ass stack in this purse so these niggas know I'm working. I'm holding this Glock in my Birkin. Niggas got a whole that L trying to come for my pen. I'm really finna
this theme of minimal, aggressive piano beats is continued in Mamushi.
Kind of like if it's a Megan beat, it's got to have Megan's piano in it.
Exactly. Now, Mamushi is not the only track on Megan that has been influenced by Japanese music and Japanese culture. Let's spin Otaku Hot Girl.
Touch me like Gojo. Look good at all my photos. Just landed in Kyoto. I'm worldwide. These bitches local. Arigato. Arigato.
Otaku Hot Girl. I love this title because it really defines who Megan is to a degree. Otaku is a term that refers to someone who loves anime.
Hot Girl is Megan's whole identity.
Exactly. So I wasn't aware of this. Maybe you were. Megan Thee Stallion is obsessed with anime.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay.
You can find all these videos on YouTube of her just like talking to various anime channels about like all the shows and characters she loves. She is deep in this world.
So this is making a lot more sense. This is why she's like putting a hand out to the Japanese music market. Like she wants to be a part of this culture.
The lyrical references here are mostly to an anime show called Jujutsu Kaisen. And that's where the character Gojo comes from that she raps about in the chorus.
Wait, so what's Gojo's thing? Like, why can't you touch Gojo?
Okay, I didn't go deep into the world of Jujutsu Kaisen. Okay. So someone else will have to chime in on that note. But I can tell you, Charlie, that this is not the only reference to the show. There's not just lyrical references. There's a musical reference, too. This beat that we're hearing on Otaku Hot Girl.
That sort of thing? Are you going to tell me that's the theme song?
That is the theme song to Jujutsu Kaisen.
Oh, the little plucky synth thing. It's a cool sample. It's such a funny sample, too, because it's hardly a theme song. That's almost more like an audio tag. That's like just a little ID. It's quick.
Well, it's something that you would probably only know if you're a fellow otaku like Megan. You and I are not. I can't even tell you who Gojo is. So clearly. I'm not going to catch this.
Yeah.
But what I can catch is a musical link between this song and Mamushi, which is the use of breath that we were talking about. I mean, the breath is almost like a counter melody to the words and the flow that Megan uses. I get the trending off every new photo. Want this horse on the chest like a polo. Niggas buy down when I pop out like Sukuna. Eating these rap bitches that give me booted up. Pushing my flow up, it feel like it's two of us. If I let Tina, that's a cool girl.
She does a lot of ad-libs in her tracks. A lot of you know, that's like her signifier. This track has a whole layer of ad-libs of her just going, it's pretty funny.
But they're even deeper than that. They're like, they're like, I mean, when I did that, it sounded like a snake. So maybe that's another part of it here. But I just feel like there's this theme throughout these songs, throughout this whole record of like Megan putting in the work, her breath, her panting, her effort. You hear it on every track. It becomes its own part of the soundscape of her world. It's really cool. So this is a surprising moment that these songs, which embrace Japanese culture and Japanese language, have exploded into the U.S. public consciousness. That is kind of unusual, maybe even unprecedented. And in fact, when other artists have tried to do this in the past, the results have been ranging from just kind of musically ineffective to downright offensive. We'll get into that after the break.
When you run a small business, you know firsthand how hard it is to acquire new customers with ads on social media. Advertising on TV works, but for years it was too expensive, difficult to measure, and only accessible for advertisers with large budgets. That's why Kevin O'Leary created Wonder Ads. Powered by Tataris, Wonder Ads makes TV advertising as simple as digital ad platforms. Know which creative is performing, test across popular cable networks and streaming services, and track metrics like customer acquisition cost and return on ad spend. Scale your small business on TV. Submit a demo at wonderads.com.
Legend has it that John Muir spent a summer befriending grizzlies in the Sierra Nevadas. Bear Grylls once crossed the North Atlantic in an inflatable boat. The most devout adventurers will always find a way to push themselves, to go farther, stay longer, and push harder. And now there's a luxury vehicle that can keep up, the Defender 110. The whole Defender family of vehicles have been engineered for a new generation of explorers, built with robust materials and tested to the extreme, all to ensure comprehensive on- and off-road capabilities. With a tough, rigid body design and durable, lightweight architecture for extra strength and maneuverability. Whether you're exploring the desert, the rainforest, a beach, or a mountain, the Defender can handle it all. For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. Whatever your lifestyle, the Defender family has a model to fit. There's the two-door Defender 90 for a smaller crew, or the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. A vehicle made to go further, the Defender 110. Explore the full Defender lineup at LandRoverUSA.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Okay, Charlie, if we're going to talk about the history of U.S.-Japanese music relations, we actually have to go all the way back to 1963. And we have to listen to a number one hit on the U.S. Billboard chart. I'm talking about Sukiyaki by Kyu Sakamoto.
What a novel song.
That was a number one hit in the U.S., Charlie.
Huh. Wow.
Okay. First of all, it's very important that we understand that this song's original title was not Sukiyaki.
Okay.
And this title, which was given to the original Japanese song by some record label executive,
yeah,
shows us how there's already a tension in the 1960s between the U.S. and Japan, because Sukiyaki is like a dish from Japan that was popular in the United States that consists of like thinly sliced beef and noodles.
Okay.
And to be clear, this song
has nothing to do with some thinly sliced beef noodles, I'm guessing.
No, this song is not about food. Its first line, ue umuite, means I look up as I walk, and then the lyrics continue, so that the tears won't fall, remembering those spring days, and tonight I am all alone.
So someone chose Sukiyaki, assuming it was the only Japanese term someone might know. It's like calling the song California Roll.
Exactly.
But, I mean, California Roll would be only more offensive, maybe. I'm not sure. I can't grade the offensiveness, but yeah, that's like incredibly reductive.
This song is beautiful, catchy, clearly resonated with American listeners, even if they didn't speak Japanese. Mm-hmm. And it also had another meaning for Japanese listeners as well, because later in the song, the singer, Kiyo Sakamoto, sings about looking forward to a brighter future. And that wasn't just about like a new romance or happier days in his personal life. The lyricist of this song was inspired by a debate going on in Japan in the early 1960s of whether to allow the U.S. to build military bases in their country.
Huh.
And this lyricist said he put these words into the song as kind of a subtle protest, telling Japanese government, don't let this happen. Don't allow the U.S. to build bases on our land.
Wild that it became a hit in the U.S. and U.S. listeners had no idea what they were listening to.
Right. And of course, the U.S. did build these bases after right. Japan agreed to a treaty the following year. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that probably influenced the development of Japanese hip hop and artists like Yukichiba, who we heard earlier, because just like in South Korea, as we discussed in our episode about Epic High a few years ago, the presence of these military bases allowed U.S. music to proliferate through these countries.
The U.S. military industrial hip hop complex.
Okay, I want to move on from Sukiyaki, but I just need to acknowledge this song had a lasting impact. It wasn't just popular in 1963. There were covers of this song stretching through the next multiple decades of American popular music. The band Taste of Honey recorded an English version of Sukiyaki in the 1980s.
What an interesting inversion, where the original version includes a sort of like a jazz orchestra and feels in many ways much more Western. And in the cover, we're using traditional Japanese instrumentation and English lyrics. The whole thing has switched up.
Totally. And if this inversion surprises you, I think you'll be agog at the next version of the song I'm going to play, which is by the Tejano singer Selena, recorded in 1993.
This is neat because we have a very synthesized version of the song, which is using synthetic versions of what may be Japanese instruments. What's very cool is that three of the most important synthesizer companies are Japanese. The Roland Corporation, Yamaha, and Korg. And it's very likely that the keyboardist on this production by Selena would have been using one of these Japanese synthesizers.
Combined with that sound are these traditional Latin percussion instruments. I hear maybe like a güero or a shaker. Maybe some bongos or congas in there as well. It's like such an interesting mix. And of course, she's singing the lyrics in Spanish. So this song has had remarkable transformations since its debut in 1963.
Yeah.
Since Sukiyaki, there have been a few Japanese songs or Japanese artists that have charted on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, including Pink Lady with their song Kiss in the Dark in 1979. But it's not really until the 2010s that Japanese songs and Japanese artists start to appear more frequently on the Hot 100. And some of these songs are not what you would call the weightiest imports. There's the viral track PPAP by Pico Taro, which charted at number 77 in October 2016. And if you need a refresher, Charlie, PPAP, that stands for Pen Pineapple Apple Pen.
What?
I have a pen, I have an apple, apple pen, I have a pen, I have pineapple, pineapple pen.
Are you kidding me? What is this?
Have you never heard this?
No.
Oh, man. You've never seen this viral video from 2016.
Oh, that makes sense. So this was like a YouTube video that turned into a song that ended up on the charts at the, on the bottom of the charts. Okay.
It's 44 seconds long, so its status as a song is even arguable. But it's a very entertaining video, so I do recommend checking it out. In addition to this novelty song, Pen Pineapple Apple Pen, we have Hikaru Utada with Face My Fears, which just cracked the Hot 100 in February 2019. Charlie, could I put you on the spot and ask you to guess the U.S. music producer who worked on that track?
It's Skrillex, obviously.
It's Skrillex, yeah.
I mean, I was like, this is such a late dubstep entry into the charts, because dubstep's moment was really much more around like 2010-ish. Yeah. And here we are, you know, nearly 2020. But Skrillex, you know, he just keeps pumping out hits. And maybe pumping is the right word, because this song is pumping. Woof,
woof, totally.
Woof. You can hear all that sidechain compression, that sort of breathing quality to the track.
There was an English version and a Japanese version of the song. I'm not sure exactly which one charted, but either way, there it is.
Okay.
Now, these are all examples of Japanese artists going back to the 1960s who have managed to break onto the U.S. Billboard charts. But what about artists like Megan Thee Stallion, who are American but are trying to incorporate Japanese music and Japanese culture into their work? Well, that hasn't always gone so well in the past.
Yeesh.
We have to talk about Gwen Stefani's Harajuku Girls from 2004.
I knew this was coming. Oh gosh. This is a lot. We get a introduction with traditional Japanese instrumentation. I am not an expert. It sounds like perhaps a koto could be another Japanese string instrument. We get some kind of traditional Japanese flute. There are a handful of different Japanese flutes, so I can't identify which one it is. And then we get an 808 drum groove. The 808 drum machine, while popularized by American hip-hop producers, was produced by the Roland Corporation, a Japanese company, so maybe that's fitting. And then we just get her mewing like a cat, and it doesn't get better from there.
I mean, even the lyrics of this song are a little cringy.
Yeah.
She says, "A subculture in a kaleidoscope of fashion prowl the streets of Harajuku. I'm hanging with the locals." It's like your friend who goes to Japan once, and then like all their Instagram stories are about, you know, I feel like a local here. And you're like, you're not. You're not.
It's just worth pointing out as a reminder, Harajuku is an area of Tokyo,
yes,
in which it's a major sort of shopping mall area in which there is a subset culture of mostly young people dressing in very over-the-top fashionable ways. It's an ever-evolving place of fashion and culture, which Gwen Stefani is trying to claim because maybe she went there once.
So Harajuku Girls, it wasn't just a song from this 2004 album, Love, Angel, Music, Baby. These were literal women who were Gwen Stefani's kind of backup dancers plus like entourage. Each of them were given one of the names of this title. So one was Love, one was Angel, one was Music, one was Baby. They famously did not speak ever. They were almost like these background props. And this led a lot of critics at the time to really reject Gwen Stefani's perceived appropriation and exoticization of Japanese culture.
I would love to think that Gwen Stefani is still walking around with this posse of friends and they actually remain friends forever. She didn't go to Harajuku once. She actually completely transformed her identity. And she, this is obviously not the case. Like, this was like, she tried on a culture for a second and then it sounds like she probably just turned around and did the next thing.
Well, in her defense, she, like Megan Thee Stallion, was someone who was a legitimate lover of Japanese culture. Her father was a businessman who worked in Japan for 18 years. So she grew up always being exposed to this culture. She says her goal was to honor it and promote it. but maybe she didn't do that in the most tactful or respectful way.
Yeah, I mean, Megan is sharing the mic equally with another star. It's a very different way of approaching the issue than having some people in the background.
I think this is the key, Charlie. Megan Thee Stallion gives voice to a rising Japanese hip-hop artist, Yuki Chiba, in her track Mamushi. She lets this culture speak for itself. Gwen Stefani uses the culture to speak for her. And that's exactly what another pop artist did in their song Hello Kitty from 2013. And that's Avril Lavigne. Mina psycho, arigato. Okay, besides the lyrical abomination that is let's all slumber party like a fat kid on a pack of Smarties, someone chuck a cupcake at me, which turns my stomach.
It's giving big, how do you do, fellow kids kind of vibe. Just like, it feels like this was written by somebody who is like, I saw a postcard of Japan and we should do a song about Japanese culture. What do we say? Avril Lavigne was already far into her career at this moment. Like, she's not having slumber parties. She's not into kawaii culture. It's just like, it doesn't read as genuine.
Nor does the chorus. Come, come, kitty, kitty, you're so pretty. Don't go, kitty, kitty, stay with me.
it's very silly.
It's like every 10 years, there's an artist who tries this, apparently.
Yeah.
Right? 2004, Gwen Stefani. 2013, Avril Lavigne. And now, 10 years later, Megan Thee Stallion, 2024, with Mamushi. And yet it feels so different now.
Yeah.
And I think that's for some of the reasons we've already mentioned. I mean, Megan's someone with a genuine love and admiration and deep knowledge of Japanese culture, of anime, of Japanese hip-hop. Megan Thee Stallion brings these Japanese artists into the fold, the producer, Koshi, the rapper, Yuki Chiba. And she gives them a platform and allows them to speak for themselves.
She doesn't use the instrumentation of traditional Japanese culture.
Ah.
Instead, brings in Megan's piano. It feels a little bit more like a handshake rather than, yeah, I flew in once and I brought this, you know, this little tchotchke back with me kind of vibe that we get from the other songs.
That's interesting. She's maintaining her own sonic identity. So there's this sense of cultural exchange, perhaps, rather than cultural appropriation. There's a give and take, a back and forth that results in something new and exciting and ideally, you know, beneficial for both cultures.
We even talked about how she establishes this triplet feel in her voice, which is then borrowed in the second verse rap. And so there really is this exchange going on.
And I feel like this is important because Japanese culture is on the rise in the United States. I spoke to Hannah Lee, who is the program associate in culture and entertainment for the Japan Society. And she told me that we should get used to more Japanese collaborations like this. Because Charlie, you and I may not be familiar with the world of anime, with Jujutsu Kaisen, with Japanese hip hop.
Not yet.
But Gen Z is.
42 plus percent of Gen Z watches anime on a weekly basis.
In fact,
according to the Polygon report, more Gen Z follow anime on a weekly basis than like watch NFL or something. And I was like, I can believe that.
Oh, interesting, huh?
So I feel like we are on the precipice of Japanese culture becoming something really ubiquitous within the United States, perhaps similar to what K-pop has done over the past two decades.
So what you're saying is Megan is catching the very start of this new wave.
Exactly. At the very beginning of this episode, I described the song as kind of an outlier. But if we go back and listen to this conversation in maybe just a few years, it won't seem like an outlier at all. It'll seem like the start of a new cultural wave.
Cool.
And if we are on the precipice of a Japanese cultural wave, I want to look towards Megan Thee Stallion as the standard bearer for how this can go down. Because we've heard this is what we could call a cultural exchange.
Yeah.
It's respectful. It's deeply knowledgeable. It platforms and promotes Japanese artists.
Yeah.
That's always important within any kind of cultural borrowing.
Yeah.
But it's especially important in this relationship between Japan and the US because this is a fraught history.
Yeah.
Socially, culturally, politically. World War II, the atomic bomb, Japanese internment.
Mm.
I'm not saying that musicians have to deal with these heavy historical facts, but that is always in the background,
right,
of this transnational dialogue.
Yeah.
So here in 2024, when we might be on the verge of another moment of intense cross-cultural collaboration and exchange, who do we want leading that charge, Charlie? Is it Gwen Stefani or Megan Thee Stallion?
Yeah.
Ah. I know who I'm choosing.
Pushed on Pop is produced by Rana Cruz, edited by Art Chung, engineered by Brandon McFarlane, illustrations by R.S. Gottlieb.
Special thanks to Hannah Lee from the Japan Society and Davis Jung.
We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod.
Otakus, weebs, all other lovers of Japanese culture, find us on social media at Switched on Pop and tell us what you're loving about Megan's album. Tell us what other Japanese hip-hop artists, J-pop artists, Anisong artists we should be listening to. And tune in next week when we'll be back with a brand new episode.
Until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Gasegu, orewa wasta, okane gasegu, watashi wasta.
When you run a small business, you know firsthand how hard it is to acquire new customers with ads on social media. Advertising on TV works, but for years it was too expensive, difficult to measure, and only accessible for advertisers with large budgets. That's why Kevin O'Leary created Wonder Ads. Powered by Tatari, Wonder Ads makes TV advertising as simple as digital ad platforms. Know which creative is performing, test across popular cable networks and streaming services, and track metrics like customer acquisition cost and return on ad spend. Scale your small business on TV. Submit a demo at wonderads.com.
Attention, adventurers. Just because you're comfortable roughing it in the woods doesn't mean you can't drive there in style and comfort. Introducing the Defender 110, a luxury vehicle that was built for the modern explorer. Equipped with 3D surround cameras with ClearSight ground view, you can see underneath the vehicle to navigate tough terrain. Plus an intuitive driver display and next-generation infotainment system to make the most of your driving. A vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Build your Defender at LandRoverUSA.com.